Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
For all things ATL.
ATL.
For everything Falcons.
First to the end zone, touchdown!
This is Peachtree Football. Now, your host, Dylan Matthews and Bo Morgan.
What's going on, everybody? It is your boy, Dylan Matthews, alongside the man, the myth, the legend himself, Bo Morgan, and together we are Peachtree Football. Make sure you download the podcast, follow the podcast. You can get it wherever you get your podcast. That's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, wherever you get your podcast. That's where Peachtree Football is. Thank you guys so much for tuning in and listening. We got a great episode lined up for you guys because we are getting into the matchup that is Falcons at Seahawks. Falcons traveling to the 12th man. Well, they've been there. They've been in Seattle for over a week now. Bo Morgan, he might be getting a little homesick as long as he's been on the road. We'll get into that in a second. But we are getting into the matchup, so we're giving you our matchups to watch. Keys to the game, and you know we come with some score predictions to end the episode out. But first and foremost, Bo Morgan, how are you doing? Are you starting to get a little homesick?
Homesick? I mean, there's things I miss about home. Yeah, obviously I miss my wife and miss my gym too. I'm not going to mention, and that's the second thing, which is kind of weird. But I'm getting kind of tired of making up some stuff in this small little gym we got here and dealing with a crowded gym. But I do miss my wife. I miss my dog.
Yep.
Miss Lola a lot. I'm not homesick. I don't really get homesick. Uh-huh. I get tired of being in a hotel after a while.
Right.
That's
right.
Probably, you know, when we were in the pandemic, I would walk outside during some commercial breaks when we were doing Dukes and Bell. I'd walk outside and, you know, go to the mailbox or just, you know, take a minute here or there. And, you know, it's kind of not feasible. with being in a hotel. So no. I'll get out of the room for a minute during a break, but that's the only thing for me is I'm just starting to feel a little
stir crazy,
barricaded in. The last time I did this, I did mornings, so I would wake up super early, do the show, and then I could kind of do whatever the rest of the day. And,
right.
This is a little bit different because it's more in the middle of the day.
Exactly.
And so, yeah. But no, I mean, it's good. I've enjoyed the trip so far. Again, I don't really get homesick, but it will be nice to go home, sleep in my own bed, and be in my own environment. But yeah, it's cool. It's an experience. I kind of like, you know, working remote at times and getting out here and, going through different stuff. So, yeah. No, not homesick, I guess, in a long answer.
Squidbilly does, though. Miss his wife. He misses Lola, the dog, and he misses getting swole at his own gym. So some things to miss at home for sure. But Squidbilly will be back soon. You've been on the road for like almost a week now. I think tomorrow will be a week, right?
Yeah, we left Saturday morning to come out here. So tomorrow will be a week. So all in all, I guess I'll arrive Monday morning back in Atlanta, like 5 or 6 in the morning. So I guess it'll be a full 7-8.
Yeah.
Almost 9 days.
Full stretch of Squidbilly being on the road. But we will we got some business to take care of before Squidbilly comes back and before we sign off today. And that's to give you all the information and insight you need going into this Falcons Seahawks matchup. So
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, But Philip doesn't have the athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Without further ado, Bo, let's go ahead and get into our matchups for today. What's first on your matchups to watch for Sunday?
One of the matchups I've got is, to me, I feel like we have a struggling AJ Terrell. Yes. I think AJ's given up 3 touchdowns already. Now, a couple of those are really great. The other one, I've talked with Arch about this, and mm-hmm. we kind of looked at maybe technique or what could have happened differently. And it almost looks like maybe he's got to get a jam immediately there, and he doesn't okay. on the line of scrimmage, and it kind of allows the receiver who ran the route to get that separation. So to me, it's AJ versus Metcalf. Metcalf has only got 11 catches so far for 71 yards. So
yeah, he hasn't gone off at all.
No touchdowns. So he's really in his career here. I think he's going into his fourth year. He's been a big play guy. They're paying him like a big play receiver, and he's just not made those plays as of yet. And so to me, that's a big deal in this game.
Right.
Can AJ or Hayward, whoever is over there, can they keep him from having those big plays? We've seen big plays hurt this Falcons team already against the Saints. Obviously, that 4-play drive that really put them back in the game. That was a drive where it was chunk. So there's big plays. So can AJ come in and limit DK Metcalf? Metcalf has played well against the Falcons, and in 2 games, he's got 7 catches for 108 yards. With 3 touchdowns, so almost Oof. Half catches have been touchdowns. So
right.
that's a guy that, you know, I know it's different players, but he sees the red and black, and he's not worried. He knows he can play well against him.
You think it's luck time?
So you gotta be careful with it. He's a 6'4", 200, almost 40-pound receiver. Where AJ is you know, he's good size for a DB, but he's 6'1". Little on, you know, under 200. So there's a 40-pound weight discrepancy there and a couple inches. So if you're going to get up and maybe jam him, you got to be careful with that. So I expect to see him play a little bit off and try to, you know, basically run with him instead of trying to challenge him and play some kind of press coverage or press bell coverage or whatnot. I would expect him to give a little bit of a cushion, but that's been the issue. You don't want to give too much of a cushion. But really, for right. me, limit DK Metcalf with the big plays. And I think the guy for that is AJ Terrell.
It's interesting that you say that, because I've heard Arch say it too, because he said it on the broadcast about, and it hasn't just been AJ Terrell, because I think he talked about it was either Casey Hayward, maybe it was D. Alford, not jamming at the line. And this was in the Rams game. I forgot who it was supposed to be, the receiver that is. But he talked about, I think it was near the goal line, and he talked about, you know, not jamming the receiver coming off his route, and he just ran an easy fade route. Now, luckily, Matthew Stafford didn't hit him, but that is a thing, you know, that you're talking about now, is jamming receivers at the line and, you know, really getting their hands on them within those 5 yards that you can do that. But like you said, I don't know if that's necessarily the strategy for DK Metcalf, because he is strong. I mean, he's extremely fast too, but he's also massively strong. I mean, he's just a terrific, terrific athlete. So it'll be interesting to see how they approach what they do with DK Metcalf and how AJ Terrell handles DK Metcalf coming off the line of scrimmage. Do you give him that cushion? Do you try to jam him up a little bit and see if you can get big with DK Metcalf? That's probably not the greatest idea, because he might be able to, you know, no shade to AJ, but he ain't strong as DK Metcalf. So he might be able to throw him off to the side, and then he might be streaking wide open on a certain route. So it'll be interesting to see, like you mentioned, how they handle DK Metcalf. How much cushion is there? Because you don't want to give too much, like you said as well. So that's going to be very interesting to watch how they handle DK Metcalf. And I wonder if, you know, they maybe switch back and forth between maybe some snaps. AJ is on Tyler Lockett, who's obviously not as strong. He's more of a speedster, but AJ can run with him.
Well, I think it will be based. I think they'll probably just maybe cater to where guys are lined up. They might just half off the field, you know, right. AJ on one side and Casey on the other. The biggest thing to your point though about getting a jam, you have to be careful when you want to come up and get hands on a guy, because if you whiff, Now, if you whiff on a jam, they just run right by you.
Yep.
And the thing we saw last night in the Thursday night football game where the Steelers, I believe it, the Steelers were on offense. The DB got a jam at the line, and so he runs that fade to the or that you know back of the end zone route, and because of the jam, it threw the route off, and now the receiver basically his route is affected, and right. The ball was kind of over to the sideline there of the end zone, and the boundary line, and the ball just basically set over his head because the receiver's route had been thrown off by the jam. You're right, it's harder. Tyler Lockett's a guy now that you brought up.
Mm-hmm.
That's a guy who's had a lot of big games against the Falcons. Yeah. He did no touchdowns, but in four games, the guy's got 21 catches for 250. Mm-hmm. But Russell Wilson. That was Russell Wilson's guy. When Russell was here,
yeah,
he got in trouble. He always seemed to find Tyler Lockett, kind of like we've seen in the past with Patrick Mahomes, where he would get in trouble and he would always seem to find Tyreek Hill or Travis Kelce. Like those are guys that always seem to be that would get found when Mahomes got in trouble. That's what Tyler Lockett was to Russell Wilson. Now Lockett so far this year, you know, he does have 12. He's coming off a 9-catch, 107-yard game. But he's only got 12 for 135 for the season only. That's really good so far. So clearly, to your point, Geno's already found him and already gotten comfortable with Tyler Lockett.
Did you know that parents rank financial literacy as the number one most difficult life skill to teach? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app for families. With Greenlight, you send instant money transfers, set up chores, automate allowance, and keep an eye on your kids' spending with real-time notifications. Kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. And parents can rest easy knowing their kids are learning about money with guardrails in place. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey.
And let's stick to Geno Smith and the passing game because this goes in directly into my matchup. I think an important matchup for the Falcons this week is Rashawn Evans versus the Seahawks running back, Rashad Penny. Now, Rashawn Evans, we heard his name a lot during the preseason. I mean, it seemed like he was making tackle after tackle after tackle. It seemed like he was going to lead the Falcons in tackles this season. Now, him and Michael Walker, you can argue definitely has been better. He has an interception, and, you know, Rashawn Evans does it. But they do have the same amount of tackles, 13 combined tackles. Now, they're switched when you talk about solo and combined. Rashawn Evans, nine combined tackles, I guess that is. And he has four solo, and it's the other way around for Michael Walker. He has nine solo and four combo tackles. So they both with the same amount of tackles, but Michael Walker has been a little bit more impactful, obviously, with the interception. So Rashawn Evans, to me, I think this could be a really good game for him. We know how much Pete Carroll wants to establish the run game, how much he wants to run the football. I mean, because if he ain't let Russell Wilson cook, he ain't going to let Geno Smith cook. But you just talked about the passing yards that Geno Smith already has and, you know, is racked up to Tyler Lockett. So the passing game is going to be there, but they're going to try to establish the run first. So if you are able to make the Seattle Seahawks one-dimensional and Rashawn Evans, Michael Walker, and the rest of that linebacking core is able to slow down Rashad Penny in the Seahawks running game, and you put Geno Smith in some obvious passing situations, some third and longs, I think that's when you can start to see Geno Smith air it out more than Pete Carroll would like to, and maybe we come away with some more turnovers like we did in the Rams game. So stopping the run, because we know that's Pete Carroll's bread and butter. If you do that, I think you could end up having a really good day, especially on the defensive side of the football, including getting some takeaways.
Well, that's something I expect them to do. I mean, this team is last in the league in rushing at 56 yards a game so far.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of a key for the Falcons if they can slow down that run. Now we heard Pete Carroll say that he was going to unleash Geno Smith. And I don't really know what that means.
I don't either. I'm glad you said it.
I know Geno Smith is completing 81% of his passes this year. This is a guy for his career is a 60% completion percentage guy, but he is completing 81% already, so he's been very efficient.
Yeah.
But 24-30 for 197 yards is what they had last week in a game that you lost by 20 points. You know, the guy's completed almost 50 passes, and he's not thrown for over 400 yards for the season. So everything they're doing is short, mm-hmm. and they're not pushing the ball downfield. Which I do think that's why one of my matchups was Terrell versus DK Metcalf.
Right.
Because I think they're gonna have an emphasis on that. But you're right, Rashard Penny is the guy they want to go to. You know, he's had injuries in his career, but Kenneth Walker is a rookie who's only gotten four carries so far. I don't know why they're not feeding him yet. I know he was very good at Michigan State, had a great year last year, and he's a guy who, you know, at 5'9", 210 pounds, he'll hit you. Oh, yeah. Now, Rashard Penny is a bigger bat, so maybe that's part of it, but – and I think Penny's a little bit better in the receiving game. So, what they do with these backs, but, you know, this is a situation, and it's one of my keys – but it's also kind of a matchup.
Uh-huh.
Is this Falcons defense against the Seahawks offense in the red area? This is the worst offense in the NFL in the red area. They have scored no touchdowns in the red area.
Okay.
That being said, this is one of the worst defenses.
Yeah.
The Falcons have coming in the red area. They're allowing 87% of the time touchdowns. 7 out of 9 times. Teams have scored touchdowns in the red area. So it's going to be a matchup to look at because this is one of my keys to the game is the Falcons on both sides of the ball improving. So maybe seeing them improve defensively, this could be a matchup that decides the game. Is if can the Falcons not break in that red area? And it's going to be a key to this game as well. And I'll get to that later because there's some offensive stuff where the Falcons need to improve in the red area as well. But it's pretty big. I had to double take this when I saw these red area numbers for the Seahawks and the Falcons. Unfortunately, I've lived and I've been harking on it. And I'm getting red in the face talking about the red area. Every day I come on this podcast, I talk about the red area. And we've got to it because it is such a big deal. You know, everybody can complain about Kyle Pitts not getting touches and Marcus Mariota's his inefficiencies at times were turn the ball over at inopportune times or recovered a snap that he fumbled on 3rd and 1. But ultimately, you compound those with not having success on either side of the ball in the red area, and it's a big deal, and it's costing you football games. Why you're 0-2, yep. And not honestly 2-0.
Exactly. Bo Morgan, you are right getting right in the face talking about the red area for the Atlanta Falcons because you're exactly right. Not being efficient on either side of the red area is why the Falcons are 0-2 instead of 2-0. You said it yourself. So very interesting stat there. That's a great pull. One of those things is going to have to improve for one of those teams. Either the Falcons are going to have to start bending and not breaking in the red zone, or the Seahawks are going to have to start scoring in the red zone. So one of those two things who have been pretty bad are going to have to improve this football game. Hopefully it's the Atlanta Falcons. Let's get into one more matchup, kind of slash key for this game. For me, I'm going to narrow it down to Tyler Algier because I feel good about Cordell Patterson. So that's why I'm kind of narrowing it down to Tyler Algier, but it's really the run game overall. So Tyler Algier against the defensive line and really the defense overall of the Seattle Seahawks. I say the defensive line because this Seattle Seahawks defense has given up 292 rushing yards through the first two games. That's almost 150 yards per game on the ground. The Atlanta Falcons want to run the football. They want to establish the run. Arthur Smith is obviously run first. If you can get the running game going, that's going to open so many things up. We know Arthur Smith wants to, you know, do a little RPO action with Marcus Mariota to get him out of the pocket. If that running game is going, that the defense doesn't know which way they want to go. If the run game is, you know, getting really scary out there for the Atlanta Falcons, obviously it's going to open things up for the play action and they get bootlegs they want to run. So if you get the running game going and you become, you know, you keep that Seattle Seahawks defense off balance, that's going to open so many things up for guys the Falcons fans want to see, like Kyle Pitts. You want to see more of Drake London. So If you want to see things open up on the offensive end and you want to see guys get involved, you got to get that running game going first to keep that Seattle Seahawks defense off balance. So for me, that's a matchup slash key. Tyler Algier, you want to really see him getting going. He had a okay debut, we'll say. 10 carries for 30 yards. He split carries with Cordarrelle Patterson. So we'll see if he can have a bigger impact and a bigger performance in week two. But overall, that run game has to be a factor for the Atlanta Falcons. You have to take advantage of a Seahawks defense that hasn't stopped the run so far this season.
Yeah, and that's something that this team wants to do. The Falcons have been really good at running the ball. I mean, they're seventh in the league so far at running the football. And honestly, this team's got some areas where they are, offensively, you're like, wow, really? I mean, they're ninth in scoring in the league. Wow. They're seventh in the league in rushing, and then the numbers kind of start to tail off, from there. So it is interesting. I think it's a good call. I think the thing that if I give any more away, I'm going to get into my keys of victory, which I know we're about to get to, but I like that. I think these running backs, in order to win this game, I think the Falcons need to run the ball. And I think if the Falcons run the ball well, like they've done in the other two games, not last week, not as well, but like in week one, which I think they can, according to your stats, they're gonna take time away from the Seattle team who hasn't really been great at scoring. I mean, I know that they've it's muted myself with my card. This is a Seattle team that is only scoring 12 points a game. So that really looks well. I mean, in their victory, I think they scored 17 or 16 or something like that. And then they scored 7 last week and a blowout loss. So it's very interesting, but we probably need to get to our keys. I don't want to take over, but
no, it actually is time to go ahead and get into our keys to the game. So without further ado,
ready to start talking to your kids about financial literacy? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app that teaches kids and teens how to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest with your guardrails in place. Parents can send instant money transfers, automate allowance, and more. Plus, keep an eye on spending with real-time notifications. Join more than 6 million families building healthy financial habits together on Greenlight. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey. That's greenlight.com/odyssey.
Well, Morgan, give me a key.
Well, we were just talking about red zone stuff, and I told you guys that I had more to this, and it was part of my key. I've talked about what the Falcons need to do on defense. Now I'm going to say what they need to do in offense in the red area. Mm-hmm. Falcons are scoring touchdowns 50% of the time. They're 4 of 8. 8 possessions, they've scored 4 touchdowns in the red area. That is 19th in the league, and it's tied for 19th. It's still early, so teams are all kind of have the same numbers.
Right.
This Seahawks defense has been the ultimate bend don't break defense so far. I know they gave up 27 points last week, but they have only given up 2 touchdowns in that red area. 22% of the time they're allowing touchdowns. That is second in football. That is really good. I know it's early, but that is pretty, pretty good.
Yeah.
So giving up, I think they're giving up 21 points a game. That's 15th. That number is a little bit skewed because you got blown out last week by a better team, but the week before you played well. So that number, that number's floating around there. So not only did we mention earlier about red zone efficiency for the defense, but the offense has got to be better. Again, scoring in the red area has been the reason why, to me, they're not winning games along with allowing too much. So if they can bring that number up this week against a defense that is not allowing touchdowns in that area, that is a big key for me this week.
No, I'm right there with you. You just flat out have to be better in the red zone offensively, defensively as well. You touched on it in your matchups. They just have to be in the red zone better in the red zone altogether as a team. So definitely a key. Another key for me is, you touched on it, making sure these receivers and Geno Smith don't get going. Don't let them get into a rhythm, because in these past couple of games, you've let quarterbacks and receivers get into a rhythm. In game one, it was Jameis Winston and Michael Thomas. Let them get going in the second half. Early on in the game, not so much in the second half, but in earlier in the game, you let Matthew Stafford and Cooper Kupp get going. Do not let Geno Smith and DK Metcalf and or Tyler Lockett get going at all this game. You've had a good second half. You've had a good first half. Now you need to bring that together and have a complete football game. So you need to obviously limit turnovers, all the, you know, all the regular things you need to do, but you need to most importantly have a complete football game. And on defense, don't let Geno Smith, DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett get going. Make sure those guys never are in sync for the entirety of this football game.
Sorry, I messed that up. I can't click. My clicker's not working. So I actually had issues. I love that. I love that. I had limit big plays was one of my ones, yes. Key, but also had forced Geno into being Geno. And yeah. I'm not giving that because I think that is basically yours. Yeah. And I want to add to what you said. You pointed out you got to get to him early. Geno has been able to get in a rhythm. Right? That's something, as you right. just said, you can't let him get in rhythm. Well, clearly he's completing 47 of 58 passes he's completed. Now, not a lot of yards. We went over that. But as we talked about 81% clip, if you forgot. So clearly he's been allowed to get in a rhythm, and he's allowed him to kind of do his thing. Right. I don't think you're at the same level yet as the Niners, so I don't think you're going to beat them 27-7. That's not going to be my prediction in a minute. So I think that is, you know, we can't think about, right? We can't say, oh, well, you know, they didn't really do much last week. If you don't allow them to get in a rhythm, then you make Geno Geno. And that's why I put that on there. The other thing that I wanted to get to for me is third down efficiency, all right?
Yes.
The Falcons defense is 20th in stopping third downs. They're allowing third downs to be converted almost 44% of the time. That's not being good enough. But what's been even worse is the Falcons, to me, on offense, they are only converting 34% of their third down opportunities. That's not good enough. Nope. Now, this is a defense that is actually worse than the Falcons on third down. They're allowing conversions on almost 47% clip. So wow. The Falcons have got to be better on third down. I'm not going to go Jeff Collins on you. Oh, it's the money down. It's the money down. But guess what? It's the money down. Okay. It matters. We talked about red zone efficiency, which is huge. Third down efficiency is pretty big. And the Falcons have to be better offensively. That is a key for this game. Improve your third down efficiency on offense. Like defense is defense, whatever. But offensively, we have got to convert these third downs, especially in key situations where we're driving in that red area. And my other key is I feel like I am just harking on the same things, but I'm trying to give you guys things that you won't hear other places necessarily. Right. Or maybe you do. Maybe I'm just a cliche guy, but I'm going to tell you one thing. Unforced errors. On key situations. So third downs. I'm going to start from the end. First off, you can't have first down penalties that like a holding or clip, any of those things that basically puts you now first and 20. It almost kills a drive right off the bat. Yep. But these penalties, unforced errors in the red area too, I think they've had four or five where, you know, you've had these unforced errors by holding or, you know, illegal shift or whatever in the red area, and it's killing you in there. Yep. So third down efficiency, and I'm going to go ahead and top off my third because I know we're getting up against it, but unforced errors in key situations, this team has been hampered by them so far in the first two games. Got to clean that up if we want to get that W, come home 1-2, and now it looks like, a pretty decent Cleveland team in week four.
That's a great point you made, because you look back to these first two games of the season thus far, look at what happened in key situations. Third and one, you have a chance to win the game. Win your first game of the season, put everything on a high note, and end that Sunday on a complete and utter high because of how impressive you looked. Marcus Mariota, he gets a little eager. He said it himself. He saw a look that he really liked. He tried to rush a snap, fumbled it. You go back. You don't convert on fourth, or actually you punt it on fourth and one, and we know what happens after that. In the Rams game, Marcus Mariota trying to make a play. And this isn't necessarily his fault or anybody's fault. Jalen Ramsey makes a good play. Bryan Edwards, you know, we talked about it a little bit last week. He should have, or this week, he should have, you know, tried to bat the football down maybe. But anywho, Marcus Mariota throws it to Bryan Edwards trying to make a play. Jalen Ramsey intercepts it. You know what happens after that. And I can't remember if this other one I'm about to bring up happened during the Saints or the Rams game. I think it was the Saints game, but it could have been either game. Anywho, it was a bad miscue. I believe it was third and one, or no, it was fourth and one, and we were going to attempt to go for it. But then you get an illegal shift or some type of illegal procedure, backs you up to fourth and five. You're no longer in the position to go for it. You have to punt. And that hurts you because I think whether it was the Saints or the Rams, they went on and scored. I think it was the New Orleans Saints. So that hurts you. So you have to be better in these key situations, like Bo said. You just have to be better. So that is a huge key, Bo Morgan, and I'm definitely glad you brought that up because just so many times we've shot ourselves in the foot in opportune situations to win the game, and we just haven't been able to convert, haven't even been able to give ourselves a chance to execute. And another one I'll add on to that is the end of the game against the Rams. You don't even get to – I know it was a Hail Mary and it was a long shot, but you didn't even get to take a chance because on a three-man rush, I think it was Jake Matthews that whiffed. And
No. Jake didn't whiff. I can't have you. We gotta have you.
I don't want to slander Jake.
It was Caleb McGarry, and he didn't whiff. He got beat, and kind of pushed back into the pocket. So Marcus had to move out, and then he eventually gets taken down. I just want to make sure we're right on everything. But you're right. That's a good point.
I'm glad you corrected it because I don't want to say anything that actually didn't happen. So thank you. But the point is, you didn't even get a chance to see what was going to happen if you were able to make the throw. You didn't even get the throw off. So that's not okay. So the fumble against the Saints, the interception against the Rams, that other play where you're going to go for it on fourth and one, you have the illegal procedure and you have it backs you up so you don't even get a chance to go for it. And then you not getting a Hail Mary off at the end of the Rams game. Those little things where you have a chance to win the football game or tie it up or ice the game and you don't even get a chance to do it or you can't do it because of you shooting yourself in the foot. So like you said, key miscues at very inopportune times. That's a huge key, Bo.
This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off, or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs, and My Lotto Rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
With that, it is time to get into score predictions. Bo, what's the final score on Sunday?
Well, you know, I picked the Rams last week, and I think I was really close to the final score. If I'm not mistaken, you actually were.
We'll have to rewind the tape, but I think you were very close.
Yeah. And I'm back on the Falcons this week. Like, I think the Falcons get it done. I wanted to say something like 27-17, but. Yeah. I know nothing is easy for us, so I'm going to go with 27-20 Falcons. They stay in that point average. I think they run the ball well against this team as one of the matchups or keys that you brought up. And I think it's going to be a good day. I think it's going to be a really good day for Falcons fans, and we're going to come back 1-2. So get ready. We're going to quiet down one of the loudest stadiums in the NFL. So 27-20 Falcons roll.
I love it. Gonna make that 12th man lock down a little bit. I like it. Like you said, so far this season, nothing has come easy for the Atlanta Falcons. But I do think they get their first win on Sunday. This is feeling like that type of game where, you know, Younghoe Koo, he missed a field goal early on last game. He's going to bounce back in a big way this game. Not to say he's struggling or anything, but this feels like a Younghoe Koo game winner type of game to me. So give me 23-20. The Atlanta Falcons get their first win of the season, and hopefully we start rolling from here, Bo Morgan.
Dude, I'm ready. Let's go. Let's do it. Rise up, baby. Rise up.
Well, make sure you guys follow and download Peachtree Football to hear us rise up all season long, hopefully. And heard it here. Falcons should get their first win on Sunday against the Seattle Seahawks. Whole lot of matchups are in their favor. You heard the keys to the game. You got our score predictions. You're ready for Sunday. We're all ready to watch the Falcons hopefully get their first win of the regular season. For Bo Morgan, I'm Dylan Matthews. Again, make sure you follow Peachtree Football, download Peachtree Football wherever you get your podcasts. That's on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, or wherever you like to listen to podcasts. We are there. So make sure you download Peachtree Football wherever you get your podcast. And you already know how we ended it.
H-E-L, 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 H